Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. We are positively in Essex, not Dundalk, across the bridge, hon. We're Pizza John's. I've already had crinkle-cut fries, proper gravy. They were delicious. I had a salad over here, and I had a pizza today. My wife's not here. She doesn't eat green peppers, so I ordered a pizza with a lot of green peppers on it so I could munch on that. It's a pepperoni as well. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. I have Raven scratch-offs to give away here. Also, our friends at GBMC, taking good care of me. Get your PSA check, fellas. You know what I'm talking about. I have my special night coming up in 2 weeks, so I'll be off the air that day. Rasig has left the building. John Hoey from The Wise going to be here. We're going to talk turkey trot. My pal Todd Schuller, Bill Cole were here earlier arguing about AI and kids sports and the NIL and all that. But I'm keeping Luke extra time here. We've got plenty of football on the air this week as well. But Ron Cassie's here from Baltimore Magazine. And, you know, I could talk bike riding with you. I could talk all sorts of policy and politics and the city and history and all of this stuff. But you're like a legit baseball dude. And I thought you and Luke, do you guys even know each other? Have you met in a press box or anything like that or no?
We've been on the show, I think, once before.
Yeah.
Oh, you've been on a show together.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we don't know
each other extremely well, though, or anything like that.
Yeah, I don't
like
know
that.
If you like Stan Jablonski's here from Chicago, Illinois. So, like, you know, people all come together. Off-season, Game 7, Ron, it was one of the greatest World Series ever. And I know he goes back to 69 with the Mets, so he has a whole different thing that goes on with that. Yeah, he's got a different – Hoey, I'll deal with you later on, you New Yorker types, you know. But you're from Jersey. Forget about it, right? Jersey, right? Yeah. Well, you're a Mets guy, though.
I was born in North Jersey. My dad was a Brooklyn Dodgers fan. He was the classic family. My dad's a Brooklyn Dodgers fan. My uncle, his older brother, was a New York Giants fan.
That's great.
And the grandfather was a Yankees fan. I mean,
that's
my
tremendous.
Grandfather lived to be 94, and I took him to a game at Camden Yards. Lived that long to see the Yankees play, but he saw Babe Ruth and Garrick play. He
was my father.
He was a pin setter at a bowling alley, and they'd save their nickels. My grandfather was Frank. His cousin was Frankie too. Everybody's named Frankie in the family, and they would save their nickels and go see a doubleheader at Yankee Stadium. You know the reason that Babe Ruth is nicknamed the Bambino? It's all the Italians in the bleachers, the polo grounds, like my grandfather, who would call him the Bambino. That's where that comes from.
Nice.
That's great.
Well, I spoke to the Italian group.
Let's just talk about this. Forget about the Orioles.
So
I
became a 20th century guy.
I'll move forward. So my dad forswears baseball when the Dodgers leave for Los Angeles, his senior year in high school. My dad played baseball. But then a couple years later, he has me, and the Mets are born. And I start following the Mets as a little kid. My dad start National League guy. So we're all Mets fans in my family via the old Brooklyn Dodger.
Well, a 69 win probably helped for the rest of your life. Then an 86.
You know how it is.
Yeah,
little
much
kid,
to crow about since then.
You're a little
you
kid.
Be an
you're 5 years old, 6 years old, and you're playing catch with my cousin, and you're throwing pop-ups to each other. One of you is Tommy Agee. The other one is Cleon Jones, and you throw the ground balls. I'm left-handed, so I threw the ground balls to my right-handed cousin. He'd be Bud Harrelson. I'd be Don Clendenin or Ed Cranepool over there. And that's all you did in the summer. You know, it's just those
games.
We're
cut of the same cloth,
yeah.
Even though you're from Jersey, you root for the wrong team.
Well, no, but listen, I moved here in the early 80s and the mid-80s, right after they won the World Series at Orioles, and I went to Memorial Stadium. I had Crabs the first time. I had Natty Bowe, and I moved here. I'm like, where am I going? We don't have this.
Cassie writes books about how great Baltimore is, like literally. So you have immersed in an outsider way to fall in love with Baltimore, and the Orioles are your
team,
right?
Yeah, I was in my early 20s. You know, I listened to the old WHFS. I read the city paper. I lived in Waverly where, you know, people who had cars, I didn't, but they put the cones out, you know, and they'd sell their
parking
space
for the
Orioles games. We'd be there having a couple of beers watching a game on TV, a little black and white TV, and if the game was tied or close after three innings, you'd walk over to Memorial Stadium. You know, you get some dad and his kid were leaving because it's a weeknight. Get their stub.
Perfect.
They let you in. You give $5 to the usher. He wipes off a seat behind the dugout, and you watch six innings of baseball. I mean, yeah, of course I stayed and fell in love. Who wouldn't?
All right. Well, I want Luke to know you're back. So where are you on this offseason for the Orioles? I mean, we had a beautiful World Series. We had a press conference. We have a new manager. We We don't have Angelos to talk about. You and I, going back, had a lot of battles about Angelos and when that was ever going to end.
Yeah.
And what Nashville, right, and John A. and all of that. Well, it's all set now. We got Mr. Moneybags and Eric Getty, another New York Mets guy. And we've got a new manager. He was at the Habba. I don't know if you heard. He's a new manager.
Yeah.
And we were impressed by the press conference and impressed by him, I think, in regard to his pedigree and what this represents for the organization. But it's a little bit of a fresh start. But last place, ticket sales down, mojo down, Blue Jays on the way up now in a competitive way in the division. Things have gotten harder for the Orioles since this guy bought the team, in my mind.
Well, I want to ask Luke to weigh in, but I, like a lot of people, fell in love with the baseball all over again, the World Series. You know, I stopped watching Orioles about halfway through this year. I didn't go to any more games.
Tough to blame.
I didn't want to watch anymore, and because of all the reasons, I don't want to go to Apple TV. They're not feeling the competitive team. You feel like you're getting soaked every time you go to the ballpark. So I kind of just, they're not competitive. I'm not going to go. And then the World Series was so great. You get excited again. And the World Baseball
World Baseball Classic
is coming up, so I'm excited about that. Mm-hmm.
I have my Venezuela jersey.
There you go.
Oh, I still have it.
Venezuela, by the way, I've already been geeking out. They're playing, like, Dominican Republic are both in the same group in Miami in March. And I'm thinking, like, I'm going to need a vacation, right?
That sounds really good.
I'll go see that group play. Yeah. But I don't know. I have a couple feelings about the Orioles. It's like one is it was great. Made the playoffs. It's time for a whole other rebuild, right? We got Holiday. We've talked about this. Henderson, maybe Sammy the catcher. Basilio is going to be a great player. Westberg, Rutschman are probably going to be good pieces. I don't think they're superstars. They're kind of past that age already where if they were superstars, they would have really emerged by now. Young talent expresses itself pretty early in baseball.
I think Henderson is on that.
Henderson is. I think Holiday maybe has potential.
We believed Rutschman was that.
But he's not. He just hasn't really materialized offensively as that kind of all-star Johnny Bench kind of catcher, right? He's not that guy. And I think they're old enough. They're in their mid-20s where if they did have that kind of talent, it would have expressed themselves. Maybe Basilio does. Colton Cowser, what did he hit, 194 last year or something? I'm not sure about a lot of the players. They have about their talent level anymore. That's another kind of rebuild. And of course, the pitching is in shambles for injuries and a variety of reasons. I don't know what a manager does. I've always kind of been perplexed in baseball. I feel like in football, it's all that matters, right? If you have a great coach and a great team, they win wherever they go. I don't know if the manager has that kind of impact the same way in baseball. Obviously, they're going to all new hitting coaches, right?
Yeah.
The coach seems as a great pedigree. He's a classic kind of great defensive catcher with no bat, which is like your dream for
that makes you a good manager. Good manager was that.
Earl Weaver, right? Great second baseman, infielder, can't hit. That's kind of the classic. Even Johnny Yates, I think probably falls.
Bruce Bochy's that guy.
So I don't know. I'm interested to hear what you guys say about the manager. I wasn't at the press conference.
Yeah, I mean, and just to rehash it a little bit. I mean, of the three individuals that sat there, meaning David Rubenstein, Mike Elias, and Craig Albernaz, I was most impressed with Albernaz. Now, some of that is he's the new kid on the block. I hadn't heard him speak other than a few YouTube videos here and there, but he seemed personable. He seemed like he had a sense of humor. He seemed genuinely excited about the opportunity. He seemed excited about...
It was the greatest day of his life.
Yeah.
See that.
And, his wife's there. His kids are there. I mean, he's holding his daughter. And I know, that as cranky sports writers and sports reporters, we can kind of, why? It was a charming moment. I mean, it humanizes somebody in a way that, frankly, we haven't seen Mike Elias humanized in that way, in the way that Craig Albernaz right off the bat. And, that's not a bashing Elias. It's just a compliment to Albernaz. And, I mean, all you've heard around baseball is how many people really like this guy. And Rubenstein talked about it. Elias talked about it during the press conference, that as they were talking to other people, whether others they were interviewing or just talking about other candidates, how Albernaz kept coming up with others where they said, I don't know if you'll be able to get Craig. He's got a good deal in Cleveland. He's not in a rush. Steven Vogt and him are best buddies. But if you can get him, that's the guy you want to hire. And they got him. So that's something that they should feel encouraged by. Now, you know, to your question as far as what a manager does, for all the analytics and technology and the way that the game has fundamentally changed in so many different ways, it's still about managing people. And for a manager and for coaches, they're, you know, part of their job with the analysts and the people that are handling the data is to really drill down and figure out what actually is going to matter, what's going to be relatable to players, what's going to be helpful to them and not just information overload. And that's where, like he said, he flat out said, I love stats, I love numbers, but we also need to figure out what exactly is going to help. And some guys, Ted Williams wrote an entire book, what, six, seven, eight, you know, however,
Science of Hitting,
six
baby.
Decades ago, whenever it was.
My dad gave me that one too. Yeah.
You know, but well, you think about
the little nine boxes in
Ted,
there.
Ted Williams would have been the greatest player of all time if he had all of this data at his disposal, because that's how much of a genius he was. And how I remember players talking about, Mickey Mantle once did an interview where he was talking to Ted Williams at an All-Star game, and Ted was asking him all these questions, and he said he went into a slump for the next 3 weeks because he didn't know what the heck Ted Williams was talking about, right? So, and Mickey Mantle said that. So you have players like that, and then you have players that are, I don't want to say this too simplistically, but see ball, hit ball, right? I mean, it's much more of a, they're a gifted athlete, and it might be, hey, give me a couple little things here. What should I be looking for first pitch? If I get down 0-2 or if I work a 2-2 count, what's this pitcher most likely to throw in that spot?
Ideally, that's what you want to get to as a hitter.
Exactly.
It's just
exactly.
Be that relaxed and, yeah.
Right. It's like a quarterback reading defenses. Like,
right.
Yeah,
exactly. Some quarterbacks will process. I mean, you have someone like Peyton Manning or Tom Brady just maniacal in how they prepared. Whereas Brett Favre was a gunslinger, and he was going to have games where he threw five touchdowns, and he had other games where he threw five interceptions, right? So you always have different human beings that are incredibly gifted, but they're still different as professional athletes. That's why it is coaching still
managing.
Matters.
Yeah. Managing.
And I think you're hoping, right? You know, to your point with some of these guys that didn't perform as well this last year, or in the case of Adley Rutschman going back a year and a half now, you know, a fresh set of eyes, a fresh perspective, some fresh ideas that you hope that even if what you were trying to implement the last year and a half with him wasn't necessarily bad, but it didn't work. So maybe a different message, a different set of eyeballs that brings a new perspective, I mean, and some more success.
I think Buck Showalter was a great manager of people.
Sure.
I think Brandon High was, I think, a great manager for the Orioles.
Yeah.
I mean, that way he weathered all that those terrible seasons and then managed to produce two playoff teams at the same time.
And one with the same guys.
Same guys.
Mullins,
terrible
all
the way
through. Struggled. Yeah.
And you can't, obviously, last year you couldn't fire 27 guys, so the manager goes. But Earl Weaver used to say, you know, momentum is the next day's starting pitcher. And so that's my, it seems like a great hire. And it is, like you said, it's, you know, in some ways, it's one of the best things about sports when somebody reaches that level. They're a minor league ball player. And now they're in their, you know, 40s or 50s or something to get that head coaching job. It's a great moment for them and their families. It'd be interesting to see if the new coaching staff, because like I said, like how much do the hitting coaches, they have like three or something, right?
Yeah.
How much
do
they help the right? Because they were last year like worst in runners with scoring position batting average.
Well, they don't draw walks. They don't take pitches.
They don't draw walks. They didn't hit with runners in scoring position. And
they changed Rutschman for the worse. They've changed some guys for the worse.
And it made you a little nervous.
Certainly with the aggression and trying to hit home runs.
When they make the playoffs 2 years because they're winning more one-run games than anybody else, it's like we love to watch that baseball and they're resilient, but it's also scary. Because baseball is a tricky game.
Yeah.
Tightrope. And that's going to go sideways probably. So it'd be interesting, you know, to see what kind of impact he has. I'm really mostly interested in seeing, you know, what kind of starting pitching staff they put together. And, you know, we really haven't seen if Rubenstein's putting his money where his mouth is.
Yeah, that's sure. Where's the money? Where's the intention? But you mentioned something about managing people, and Ron had a snide conversation. These guys, 25, they haven't made it yet. That's an interesting observation because that's...
They're not that... Some of those guys are... Adley Rutschman's going into his age 28 season.
Exactly.
He's not young. For catcher standards, that's not remotely
but
young.
But this is where a guy like me, even as jaded and what a jerk I am on the radio, right? I still look at Adley Rutschman as, it's Adley Rutschman. It's Jackson Holliday. It's, oh, he's a one. Kowser's a lottery pick. Oh, my God. We got, you come at it from the, yeah, we got failed prospects here. And Craig Albernaz may come in here and say, Rutschman, I don't care if you're 1-1 or 1-100, dude. Get in the cage, and whatever you are on March 25th is going to dictate what you are on my team. Whereas Brandon Hyde saw all these guys as baby birds, and they were all his children. And, you know, I got to keep Rutschman in the lineup, and I you know, I don't want to hurt this guy's feelings and move him down or move him in. The outside comes in and says, you're not my golden child. I didn't draft you. You're just a player to me.
Yeah.
And I think that philosophically is where Elias gets outside of himself in dealing some of these guys that have failed, disappointed, or in the case of Henderson, and I brought this up, and I'm not going to leave this alone, excelled and aren't going to take your money come free agent time. Because if you're not going to sign some of these guys, then their time clocks and their asset pieces become how you're going to get that pitcher.
Yeah.
Because to this minute, we've dealt Ortiz and Stowers and Norby and whatever. We haven't touched any of the tectonic plates.
Some of them have done pretty well.
Yeah, Stowers been okay. But we haven't touched any of the untouchables.
Yeah.
And I think in the old world, when they're little plants and you're watering them, like Jackson Holliday, you can't have him. He's Jackson Holliday. Well, he's a 22-year-old guy. What's his ceiling now? Is his ceiling it being a 288 or with 18 awards? Or is his ceiling 1-1? Five-time MVP going to the Hall of Fame. I don't know.
I don't know about,
but we're making
Kobe Maya is another guy
who's
not really that young, actually. I mean, guys like Cal and Eddie, now I know these are exceptional Hall of Famers, but they came up, they were like 19 and 20. And one little funny point about the hitting with runners in scoring position, because this I saw a weird statistic. They're both like top five all-time in sack flies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know they played a ton of games. But, like, that kind of productive out is another thing the Orioles never had last year. To your point, these guys strike out a ton. They don't walk. They don't even have productive outs. It really hurts. But I just think some of these guys, and Jackson Holliday is still very young, and Gunnar is obviously an electric talent, potentially a generational talent still. A lot of the other guys look like pieces. I mean, Westberg, I actually didn't get hurt really late.
I like Westberg a lot. The availability has been an issue.
He has such a tight swing. He's not a guy who's going to go into extended slumps to me. And he plays all the positions. He hustles. Mm-hmm. He runs. He's like a classic, you know, maybe not an all-star player, but a guy who's going to win you a lot of ball games.
Yeah.
The other guys, Kowser, I haven't seen it yet from Kobe Mayo.
Mayo's the one that I struggle with because he's still young. Now, he's not as young as Holliday, but he's, I think, going to be 24 this coming year. You look at how he profiles. I still would, you know, I'm not a betting guy, but if you ask me to bet whether he's going to be a successful guy that could be a 30 home run guy in the majors or not, I'd still lean towards that. My problem with him is I don't know how quickly that's going to come together because that profile where it's a lot of swing and miss, like I'll use Chris Davis as an example.
Yeah.
And end of his career aside, Chris Davis was a wildly successful acquisition for the Orioles, you know, what he ultimately became. But he didn't really become that guy that was a true middle-of-the-order 35 to 50 home run guy until he was like 26.
Neither did Santander.
Right? Santander, yeah. I mean,
who was
the
left-handed hitter for the Orioles? The blonde-haired guy. I can't remember his name right now.
Who went to Miami?
No, he's the Orioles outfielder.
Dylan Beavers?
No.
Stowers?
No, the other guy.
Heston Kerstedt.
Yeah.
Heston Kerstedt.
What's happened to him?
He's got a health issue, right?
It's been a health I don't know how much of that pertains to just how mightily he struggled this year look, when Colton Cowser breaks his thumb, you know, fractured his thumb on the first Sunday of the season, I mean, he had a 2-month runway to play every day and he just did not take advantage of it. He has a health issue. What they've said since the end of the season, it does sound like they have the medical staff and anyone treating him has their arms wrapped around it. It sounds like they're optimistic he's going to be ready for spring training. But, I mean, I kind of – he's almost in that Grayson Rodriguez, Tyler O'Neill category for me.
Yeah.
Even less so, though, because we just – there hasn't been any body of work from him.
It seems like we're back where we were 6 years ago.
I mean, it's
– A little bit.
5 years ago?
No, Angelos is not here, so we got that going on. Well, I mean, you perceive that these guys are going to spend money.
Well, and there's,
but you've got a couple pieces.
And I would also say, like, okay, look, Colton Cowser didn't have a good year. I'm not going to sit here and sugarcoat that. He finished second as American League Rookie of the year before. Where is the truth? Is he closer to that player he was 2 years ago, or is he closer to the player he was this year? If he's closer to the player he was this past year, then he's at best a platoon
player. Dude, that's why this is so bipolar. Yeah. Who has had a body of work over 2 years that's been even similar? Maybe Holiday.
I mean, even Gunnar Henderson, who was still very good in a vacuum this year, was a far cry from what he was the first half of 24, where he was, for my money, the MVP of the American League.
Well, that's where we are this offseason. What are we judging them on? Well, are we judging Trevor Rodgers and Kyle Bradish on 8 weeks of work last year? Optimistically, I guess.
And this is why you can't approach this offseason in the way they did last year, which they clearly put so many of their eggs in the baskets of just this young core, right? Yeah, yeah. And look, this young core is still extraordinarily important to their success. If all these guys flop,
they could
have a $200 million payroll this year, and it's probably still not going to work out, right? That's how important it is. Now, that said, if I'm being realistic, I can't sit here and say that every single one of those guys is going to click to the degree that we're talking about them potentially being able to. So that's why you do need to bring in some established major league talent. A number one, number two, number three starter at worst a number three starter. Another guy for the back end of the rotation. Certainly they're going to need a couple high leverage relievers. They absolutely need an outfielder that can move the needle. It doesn't, I'm not saying it necessarily needs to be Kyle Tucker or that it's going to be Kyle Tucker, but it needs to be someone legit.
The kid that they signed last year, right?
Ramon Laureano?
Yes.
Yeah, who would look quite nice in an Orioles,
But you wouldn't be impressed by that.
No, but that's a great paper. Sure, and that's also the point of, look, you can't, if you're Mike Elias, it can't be all about winning the offseason from a perception standpoint. Although I have said to you, I think that is important. I think you do need to make some higher profile. Doesn't mean the highest profile signing, but I think you need to make a couple multi-year signings that look very legitimate.
They need to give us a reason to talk about
that. Sure.
They need to make you text me and say, we got to talk Orioles baseball.
But that said, I will also say that doesn't prohibit you from continuing to make some of the off-the-beaten-path signings that they've made, like acquiring Ryan O'Hearn a few winters ago, and look how great that was.
Or just bringing Kittredge back 3 days ago.
Sure. I like the Kittredge move. Now, I don't want that to be one of their two best moves that they make for their bullpen.
It's one less relief pitcher they have to worry about.
No question.
One thing that's interesting, I don't think it's talked about a lot, is that being in this division, right?
Sure.
A lot of money, Toronto.
Even more with Toronto being successful.
And by the way, I was kind of rooting for Toronto because Bichette and Guerrero, I thought
they've been. Luke thinks it's dirty, but that's okay. I do remember Cito Gaston.
I was just much more. I grew up with the Blue Jays being like the Yankees.
Right? I don't like them. I agree.
So that's where I just felt conflicted. But I'm not rooting for the Dodgers openly either.
I've watched some Orioles Toronto games and some bars up in Toronto. I did not have a good experience with those fans, to be honest.
Really?
I don't think this nice Canadian
thing. Because you're American.
American, but I think they didn't like Alomar coming here.
Well, I never thought about that.
I didn't, but it was more like I was in Boston.
I wondered if it was more of the Cito Gaston blowback.
It was like being in a Boston or New York.
Who was the guy Machado fought with? Donaldson? We had that going on, right, with the bat, right?
Yeah.
We had that, and we had the Encarnacion and all that.
Right? Although, I think, was it Donaldson with Oakland at that point in time?
Maybe. I think. Yeah, maybe he was.
I think so.
Yeah, I'm thinking so.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't
have. Manny had a few spats with a few different teams.
But I'm not looking to fight with the Canadians. I'm not a tariff guy.
But I thought Bichette and Guerrero together had been together, and they had a window, and those guys are great ball players. And I was happy. I was hoping to see them kind of get it done in Toronto.
He's trying to sign Bichette this offseason, is what he's trying to do. Here, I'm talking about.
Yeah. But here's
that was more Allen's idea,
this
by the
way.
This
is the point I was going to make.
Yeah.
Is the schedule is such that we don't play these teams the way we used to.
Right.
Our schedule's not inundated going out.
Right.
But no, we don't. It's easier for a lower market team like the Orioles or Tampa Bay to compete because we're not playing the high dollar Toronto, Red Sox, and Yankees more often than, Milwaukee is.
And
right.
So three wild cards too.
Right. Yeah. So you can. It's not like we're going to get pounded by the Yankees. I don't know, we used to play them 24 times or something.
It's more balanced. I think 19 was the peak.
It's more.
Now it's 12.
It's more balanced. So when we talk about being in this, having to compete, it's a little more level of playing field, right? I mean,
first thing they've done to help the Orioles in a generation.
It has been, right? I would love to see the TV money be, you guys were talking about, be spread around like it is in football, right?
Sure. Well, that's where
make
a
it more
year
democratic
now,
or socialist in your word.
I called it socialist because that's what it
I'm
is.
I'm calling
it
democratic.
That's what Art Modell called it. He called it socialism.
The whole
in the
league
NFL,
is socialism, right? These franchises.
Might be who, organized pay for crime
the,
for all I
we
know.
Pay,
yeah,
we pay for the stadiums and everything else.
About the NBA
they
or the
keep
NFL.
All the profits.
All right,
they
we're
keep
take a break. Luke, I go watch some football.
Yeah.
I mean, Luke Jones is here. We got some baseball. Ron Cassie, editor. Baltimore, what am I calling you?
Senior editor.
Senior editor.
I'm
well,
stuck.
You were. Your hair was looking a little silver. Maybe you've seen your editor at this point.
Oh, senior.
I love
senior.
Hearing about Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig. That was pretty cool.
Well, you guys get together, get some pizza,
awesome.
Some crinkle
early fries. 20th baseball, early 20th century baseball. That's my wheelhouse for nerdy reading and all that.
One of my favorite geeked out stories I did for the magazine was I did a profile basically of Babe Ruth 100 years after the trade, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just amazing guy from Baltimore. And he's really like a saint, right? Like he's a sinner. He's like the worst sinner ever. But then he's also like going to orphanages, and he refuses to quit playing black baseball team to get suspended. And he goes to visit a leper colony in Hawaii. Like they won't allow the lepers to come to the game, so he goes to the leper colony. He takes the Yankees inside Sing Sing prison to play. Scrimmages or whatever. A game
Babe is more interesting than I think he
was.
He was
incorrigible, but so beloved and had
this
so
is
many
why.
Great qualities.
He,
yeah, absolutely.
He would go to, when they play somewhere, he would go to in the South, whatever. He'd go to the Black House and the White House. Mm-hmm. Well, he refused. So he really is like an extraordinary figure.
Man,
why he's
sure.
beloved and why he like went to, when he went to Japan and he went to Cuba and these places, his interactions are not, because there's a lot of white ball players in those days who barnstormed against black teams. Mm-hmm. And most of them didn't like it. And some of them tolerated because they made money.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a handful, and this is what the black ball players say if you read it, there's a handful like Babe Ruth who loved it and became friends. And so he really is an interesting, great character to the game and really is deserved to be beloved. And if people gave Hank Aaron crap back in the day, as you remember, we're old enough for breaking his record, right? It's like Babe Ruth would have been the first guy rooting for a Hank Aaron. You know what I mean? Like the whole narrative of him breaking in this racism against Hank Aaron would have, you know, I'm sure had Babe rolling over in his grave.
One that I'm going to go drinking with the two of you down on the. We'll sit on the steps at Babe Ruth Museum, or Babe Ruth Birthplace. And
what a
we'll
great museum.
On his birthday.
People haven't
let's
been.
February
let's give that place a plug.
Warm, you know, I love Babe Ruth Museum.
Yeah.
By the way, I attended the Colts 75 reunion on behalf of the Babe Ruth Museum a couple months ago. Any room Burt Jones is in is a room I need to be in. You know, same thing with Lydell Mitchell.
The Rustin Rifle? Was that his nickname?
Yeah, you were a Jets fan probably, right? Yeah.
Was his nickname,
yeah,
though.
Well, yeah. My first game was Joe Namath.
I did like Lydell Mitchell and those Colts teams, the Sack Pack. I did like those guys. Playing in that dirt infield at Memorial Stadium. You know, when you're as a kid, you're watching them play on this dirt infield, and you see the row houses in the back of the ballpark in the 70s. It's a different vibe. That stadium.
That's
that
my
football.
Childhood right now. You know, that's that field right now, John Hoey at the Y, is there. It's a great transition, right? 33rd Street.
I would.
What a transition.
One of my fondest memories was driving the games, and, you know, it's a very residential area, and you'd see the light towers, and you'd see the lights on. And, like, as a 7-year-old, like, wow. I have goosebumps
as
just remembering that.
As a 20-year-old, I had goosebumps for that, you know?
Just great.
All right, we love sports.
Love that place.
We're in Essex. We love pizza, too. It's Pizza John's. All brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. I have Raven Scratch-Offs to give away. Ron's going to hang out and stay because you've actually done the turkey trot, right?
I have. I plan to do it this year again. Yeah.
Well, there you
go.
So much Thanksgiving fun. Day. My wife's going out of town on Thanksgiving Day, and I'm free. So I told John's staff, I'm like, it's like that old Bill Withers. So use me, baby. Here I am. Thanksgiving. I'm available. So I'm going to be a turkey trot this year. So the Y is coming on next. I got to find out about the Dundalk situation with the Y. Last time I saw John Hoey, we were in Randallstown. We're going to talk about the Y and everything they're doing this month. And I'm going to let Luke leave. Why? Because he needs to eat pizza.
I was going to say, you got to send me home with some pizza.
All right, you going to take some for your sister, your brother-in-law, your nieces, your mother, and your brother?
I guess so. Or I can just keep
what
it myself.
What if I buy?
No,
you want me to text Rox right now? What does she want on her pizza?
I can text her
what's
right now.
What's Rox want on her pizza?
Probably pepperoni and meat sauce.
All right, don't
she's
let her
she's a big meat sauce.
Well, get her a large. Yeah. That's it, man. Luke's got family. Essex, from Essex to southern Pennsylvania with love. Back for more. We're at Pizza John's in Essex. We're going to talk about the Y in the community. Stay with us.